Hello and welcome back to Twin Birth Stories. This is a safe space for all twin mums like myself to come on and chat about conception, pregnancy, birth and delivery and life as a twin mum now. If this is something you are interested in, you can head on over to my Instagram page at Twin Birth Stories. If you enjoyed this episode, please give my page a follow and a 5-star review. In this episode, I speak to Claire. Claire is a single mom to twin boys and conceived her twins through IVF. Claire talks about her very difficult pregnancy, whereby she had a bleed, twin-to-twin from transfusion, where she needed to get surgery, and a lot of other complications. Claire talks through her planned section at the amazing 34 weeks. Claire talks about her difficult NICU journey where one of her boys was in NICU for 18 days and the other for 24, and talks about the difficulty of having one baby at home and one in NICU. Claire talks very brutally, and Claire talks about her reality of her first 6 months, which is absolutely admirable, whereby she found it extremely difficult, where poor babies had reflux and colic. Claire was absolutely amazing. She was so open and honest and really wanted to spread, I think, the awareness of different birth stories, how someone can have an amazing birth story, but someone can also have a very difficult time. But 6 months later, it's all seemed to turn the corner, and the boys are 8 months now, and Claire is absolutely thriving by the sounds of it. So Claire's story is very real. Claire, thank you so much for sharing your story. It was amazing to listen to. Hello and welcome back to Twin Birth Stories. I am joined today by Claire. So Claire, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast. If you want to start off by introducing yourself.
Yeah, so my name is Claire. I am 37 years old. I am a mom to identical twin boys who were conceived via IVF with donor sperm.
Brilliant. And Claire, is being a mom something you've always wanted?
Yeah, always. I have a rake of nieces and nephews. And actually, even when I was a kid, my mom was baby mad, absolutely loved them. And I definitely kind of inherited that from her. So okay. I used to work with children. I used to work in childcare, kind of used to babysit from 12, 13. You know, everybody would trust me with their kids. And then had a rake of nieces and nephews, and then hit the mid-30s. And was really like, oh, I've waited long enough, time to go by myself. You know, it definitely was never going to not be a mother. I had waited as long as I could, and then it was time to take it into my own hands, because I absolutely was not going to not become a mom.
No, and I actually had another woman, Tracy, just I put up her episode, I don't know if you heard it.
Yeah, she's, I actually know boat. Tracy.
Oh, brilliant.
We were pregnant at the same time, and it's actually nice little community that we have of single mom by choice. So brilliant. We tend to have come across each other quite a lot, and the fact that we were both pregnant with twins donors at the same time. Actually, I've known her quite a while online now, never in person. Yeah. And we do have plans to meet up at some point. Oh. But yeah. And it's
well, this might prompt us to meet them.
Know Sheila as well from the NICU.
So. Oh jeez.
Yeah.
Oh my god, this is what I wanted, a little community of all twin moms that can share their stories and connect up. You might even meet Tracy now after this.
Yeah, exactly.
That's brilliant, Claire.
Similar with twins, like we are a small community, and even from the Irish Multiple Birth Association Facebook page, I'd say we've all talked to each other at some point.
That is so funny. Oh my god, I said I'd throw it out there and sure you knew her. So what was that experience like then, Claire, when you realised I'm not waiting for anyone and I'm going to look into the IVF journey? And what was that whole journey like for you then?
Yeah, I was really, really lucky. I think I know, you know, you can go into, even if you're having a solo, or you know, you're a solo person trying to have a baby, you don't know have you got any fertility issues or not, you know, until you go to the clinic and do those tests. You're kind of hoping everything would be good, and thankfully I had absolutely no issues. My IVF journey was very, very straightforward. You know, did my tests, got my egg retrieval, made a rake of embryos, transferred one, got two babies, still have loads of embryos in the freezer that I don't know will I ever need again. Thankfully I was very, very fortunate with my IVF journey. It just couldn't have gone smoother.
Brilliant. And who then did you have by your side, Claire, for support?
So I had, actually, I hadn't told my family. My family always knew, kind of, I'd say for the last 3, 4, 5 years, I've been kind of dropping hints that I might go down this path. At a certain point, you know, I wasn't going to make something happen just to try and have a family. So I had been hinting for a long time, and they always knew this was a possibility. But while I was actually going through treatment, I didn't tell them. They thought that I was doing egg freezing. So they knew I was going to, you know, preserve some stuff and then maybe make decisions in a couple of years' time. So then who knew the actual truth were a couple of, you know, really close colleagues and managers, because I knew I needed support, time off of work, the hormones might have been difficult, you know, all of those things. And then a couple of really close friends. You need somebody to drop you and collect you to the egg freezing, for example. So you do have to kind of link a few people in. So I did, you know, I did have quite a few people know just that I was minded in work. I was minded by friends. People were kind of keeping an eye out just to make sure everything is going well. But my family didn't know until I announced the pregnancy later on. So that was a shock for them.
Yeah. So do you think then, because it seems even Tracy was the same with kind of keeping the secrecy, is that because it could go on for so long? So why did you decide not to tell the family and just them couple of friends? Was it just a lot to process?
No, it was more that I think because it's so abnormal the way I became a mom, you want those moments where you wait till you're 12 weeks to announce your pregnancy. Okay. You want those little snippets of normality.
Milestones, yeah.
So it was really for that reason only, not because, you know, I was hiding it. And I think Tracy's reason was similar. You know, she wanted that surprise. I'm pregnant, you know, the way everybody gets to experience it. So that was really the only reason why I hid it from my family.
Okay, brilliant. Yeah. So what was it like then, Claire, when you had got the IVF and it was successful? What was the feeling then when you looked at the stick, if that's how you found out? And or did you know before? Did you have any
The clinic I did a blood test. So so it kind of, you know, it tells them a little bit more than, yeah, you're pregnant, to make sure that the levels are what they should be for that many days post-transfer. So I went to the clinic that morning, had a blood test, and then they call you on the phone later that day. I think most people have tested themselves all the way through, so no, but I actually avoided testing. So that call was really, I had no idea whether I was going to be pregnant or not. So when that call came through, yeah, I was delighted. You know, I think I had no reason at that point to think it wouldn't work, but you're trying to keep yourself real by saying, oh, probably won't. You know, just in case there is that disappointment that in your head you haven't gotten carried away. But I had no reason to expect me not to be pregnant, so it was just nice to be able to kind of, you know, take a deep breath and go, okay, it worked.
And Claire, where were you when you got the call, and what were you thinking after?
I was at home. I remember thinking, and I'm sure everybody else feels the same regardless of how you got pregnant, but it's like you get the news you're pregnant and you're like, okay, I don't feel any different though, you know, physically you don't feel any different, but inside you're buzzing knowing that something is happening. So yeah, it's a bit of a surreal moment, I think, when you find out you're pregnant.
Okay, wow. So then you told your family you're pregnant. Did you know were expecting twins at this stage?
No, so I hadn't told them yet. So it was coming close to Christmas. So that, I think I would say about 4.5 weeks pregnant when you do the test. And then because it was coming close to Christmas, I was having my early pregnancy scan just after 6 weeks. So it was quite early. I think normally they wait till 7 weeks just to ensure that the heartbeat has formed. So because it was Christmas week, I had my scan then. Because it was Christmas again, I had kind of ordered these little cards in, you know, that I was going to give to each of my family members. And it said, like, not all presents are under the tree. And then they were going to open it up, and there was going to be the little scan and the due dates and stuff on it. So I had bought them, and I was going to tell them then on Christmas Day.
Brilliant.
Yeah, but then a lot of craziness happened.
Okay, so then, yeah, talk me through then your pregnancy, because I know you'd said to me before recording that you had a difficult pregnancy. So talk me through that first, second, third.
Yeah, it was just finding out that I was having twins. So it was the Tuesday before Christmas. I went for that early pregnancy.
Oh, yes.
I knew straight away there was something amiss because the sonographer was scanning away or whatever, and then she goes, "You only transferred one embryo, right?" And it was in that moment I just went, "There's two babies, isn't there?" And she goes, "Yeah." And I absolutely broke. fell apart. I know some of you women have had a lovely reaction to finding out it's twins, but I did not have that reaction. I was devastated.
Okay, and what was the feel of devastation about? Do you remember?
I was doing it on my own. So like two babies compared to one as a single parent, like is...
Yeah.
It didn't feel like twice the work. It felt like my life was over. I didn't know how I was going to do it. I didn't know how I was going to afford it. I didn't know how I was physically going to manage it. I was like, I'm going to have to move back home. My parents, like I really just felt like my whole life had imploded. And I had major panic attacks about it. So like it was, I think I was probably the first person to sit in that chair in the fertility clinic with a positive result to be bawling, rise, crying in sadness. You know, I even made the sonographer cry. I really was absolutely devastated. There's no other way. Like I thought my life was over.
I never even thought it. That's the feeling that you'd be thinking of. Oh my God, there's one of me here and this is two babies. Never mind, you know, getting a great result of one. But even though it's good news for someone else, your feelings are completely valid as well. And you're allowed to feel that shock and devastation. Yeah.
And my sister has twins. So I knew exactly what was going to come. Okay, like I know how hard it is. So I knew what life was ahead for me. So, you know, and actually it's been even harder than I had thought about when I panicked. I know that's later on, but my panic was real and justified. And that was really how I felt. I was utterly devastated.
Okay. So did you sit in the room for long, Claire, or what was your whole experience after the drive home, or were you just sitting?
I got into my car and I went to work and told my colleagues and managers knew. So they all knew I was going to get my scan that day. And arrived into work and pulled my bosses in and broke down and was in floods of tears again. And then obviously because I only transferred one embryo, immediately you knew that it was identical twins and that's a high risk pregnancy. So, you know, I work in with people who know this field quite well. So, you know, their concern wasn't just for me. They knew the reality of potentially what was ahead. And then, it was a lot. But anyway, I worked that day and then I arrived. I don't know how, I don't really remember it, but later that evening, I arrived on my parents' doorstep in floods of tears and told them.
So what was their reaction? I'd say they were half feeling excited and then half feeling just like, that's my baby and she's...
Yeah.
How did they process it?
Honest answer, they asked me to keep them first. They said, please don't, you know, please don't get rid. We have you. We'll figure it out. It'll all be grand. Just please keep them, you know. Will help you. So that was their reaction initially because they just saw how overwhelmed I was. And I was in that state for quite a few days actually, and if it wasn't for their positivity, their support, you know, that kind of pulled me through and out the other side. They were excited. They could see all the positives that I couldn't see in that moment. So it was great that somebody was happy and then eventually helped me to see the good parts.
Okay, so how did you get around to this good part?
It took a while. The next day, actually, funny enough, I had a big bleed. Now, I'm going to be brutally honest. I hope people don't think I'm too negative, but I think, you know, I was saying to you a while ago, Alana, that, you know, the first few episodes were of people who had this lovely, magical experience and were so in love and with their kids. And, you know, I found those really hard to listen to because it was totally the opposite of the experience I had. And I just wanted to be as honest about it in case somebody else has the feelings I had and to let them know that it's okay to feel that way too. And that you can still come out the other side and get to that part, even if it's much later than everybody else.
Absolutely, Claire. And everything you're feeling is completely normal. And just because there is positive stories, there's also negative stories. But like you said, to come out the other end is huge.
Yeah.
And someone who is listening as well will be able to relate to you and fair play to you as well. And you share as much or as little, as I said, Claire, as you want. So this is your story, you know. So talk me through then, Claire.
I had a bleed and I was sure I was losing them. Like, there was a big gush of blood all over the floor. I was still in my parents' house at this stage because obviously mentally I wasn't very well with everything that was going on. So my mom packed me into the car. I was getting like really bad, what I thought were contractions all the way in, felt quite sick. And anyway, got to Ahala Street, went into A&E, and they scanned me there, and both babies were still there. And me being totally honest, I was devastated in that moment again. I nearly hoped that I had lost them because it had taken it away from me without me having to make any choices. So yeah, in hindsight, and actually a few days later, I was delighted. But in that moment, if I'm being so honest, I was devastated when I found out I hadn't miscarried them. Yeah, so it was a subchorionic hemorrhage. Everything was fine, told to go home and relax and everything. So yeah, babies are fine. Everybody else was delighted and I was still in my deep despair, you know, hole. And yeah, then Christmas was coming and, you know, spent a lot of time with my sister, who's a twin mom. Her twins were 1.5 at that time. And yeah, she again, you know, pull me through. Yes, it's hard. Yeah, cry, let it all out. You know, they let me just be how I feel. Whereas I found with my parents, I was still trying to, I was gutted, but I wasn't openly saying, you know, I wish this wasn't happening. I wish I wasn't pregnant. You know, I tapered it a little bit. But with my sister, she knew the hardships of it. She knew that I knew what was down the tracks, and she let me kind of cry openly and say everything I was feeling, but then kind of talk me around at the end of it. That was really good. And I'd say within, you know, 4 or 5 days, I had come out of the deep hole and was very anxious still and very nervous, but was starting to get a little excited over the fact that then I was pregnant with twins, because I knew, I guess in that moment with everything that was wrapped around me that week, I actually knew it wasn't just me. I had the support of everybody, so I didn't feel so alone with having to raise the two babies. I felt like, you know, the village had come and was going to help.
Yeah, and also, Claire, it's so lovely that your family and your sister especially let you feel what you wanted to feel, because in a lot of cases people would say you're so lucky that you're pregnant, and you're so lucky that you're pregnant too, and yes you were, but you're allowed to feel how you needed to feel. And the fact your sister gave you that space, obviously now it's just, I'd say, even thank her so much, because that's so brilliant. That's what you needed at that time. So sorry, Claire, what I said a while ago is I know you had a difficult pregnancy, first and second trimester. So if you want to talk through then, your first trimester, then obviously you're starting to get your head around it a small bit. How did that follow?
And actually, funnily, to totally flip it around, then I started to really panic about losing them, because, you know, if I now know I'm having twins and I'm getting really excited about it, if I miscarry now at this point, I'm only probably going to replace them with one baby. And I really felt the weight of that potential loss. So I found the 12 weeks waiting to kind of get to that magical, you know, space of relief past the first trimester really hard. I really, really worried about losing the babies then for the whole rest of the first trimester. To the point that I went to for a private scan at 10 weeks just to make sure everything was fine. So I could kind of, you know, okay, 10 weeks, 2 healthy heartbeats, we're nearly there in the safe zone. But actually then at that appointment, I found out that there was potentially an issue with one of the twins. So they had done the nuchal translucency measurement, and on the back of twin 2, there was quite a thickened NT. So the advice was, you know, contact Hollis Street pretty quickly and get in with the specialist, because obviously with them being identical twins, if there's a chromosomal issue with one, it's going to be in the second one as well. So I wasn't due my appointment with the twin clinic in Hollis Street for 2 weeks, but when I contacted them, they booked me in for the following week. So went in to Hollis Street, met the twin specialist there. He was scanning me, and yeah, could see there was still really thickened nuchal translucency, but actually also that twin had a really enlarged bladder. So it was a diagnosis of megacystis, which does not have very good percentages of survival, and was very, very, very worrisome. So I was advised, you know, again, because they share the same genetics, it's better to know if this is something, you know, that or the reason why this twin has megacystis, because then that will give me information that I can make a decision as to what I want to do, i.e. do I need to travel to England and terminate this pregnancy, because the odds are not very, very good. So got the CBS done. So that's when they take the sample from the baby's placenta, which then also carries a risk of miscarriage, just getting the test done. So they took the sample of the placenta, sent that off. I would get the results of the main chromosomal anomalies first. So I think there's three that they check for, the main ones. And then the following week, I would get the results of all of the other less or kind of rarer chromosomal defects. So really, there was nothing to be done at that point but kind of find out, was there an underlying reason for the megacystis diagnosis? And so a week later, I got a phone call from one of the CMM2 in the fetal medicine unit. And thankfully, the main chromosomal had come back normal. And then in that point, I also asked, could I know the sex of the babies just in case, you know, I lost them or we needed to make a bad decision that I knew what they were going to be.
Okay.
I found out they were boys at that point. So yeah, was over the moon. And then the following week I got the telephone call to say back that the rest of the results all came back normal. So the reason for the megacystis was not down to any chromosomal issue with the babies. So therefore twin one was totally fine. There was nothing wrong with it. Whatever was wrong was just relating to twin two, and it wasn't something that was going to affect both of them. So then went back for a scan after 2 weeks, and there was something called spontaneous resolution. Everything had just disappeared. Twin two was perfectly normal again. And I think from looking at the research, yeah, it happened. So I think 85% of those babies don't make it, whether the pregnancy is terminated or the fetus doesn't make it. And then 15% of them just get better on their own for absolutely no reason. And yeah, that's what happened. Like a total miracle.
Oh my God. Yeah. So were you praying, or is that even something you believe in? Or like someone must have been looking over you for that, because that's such a turnaround and the percentage is so low.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I think I was just in shock. I was like, oh, okay. So this horrific thing with like terrible diagnosis, and it's all just gone away. And then there's nothing wrong with my other twin. So now I have two healthy babies again. Like it was just...
What? Yeah. Oh, that is an absolute miracle. Oh my God, and thank God for it.
Couldn't believe it. Yeah, it was amazing. But then it didn't last for very long, because...
No, you had a really up and down pregnancy, poor thing, Claire.
So I was scanned then 2 weeks later. So I think with the... So my identical twins, they shared a placenta, but they were in two different amniotic sacs. So they're MCDA twins. So they're the category that are most likely to develop twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome. And unfortunately, we were one of the ones that got that diagnosis. So when I had come back from my... So I got a scan and everything was magically better. 2 weeks later to come back and everything was dire again. So yeah, twin one this time, the fluid had nearly totally disappeared and he was like sarang wrapped in his sack. And he had no visible bladder at all. So he wasn't, his bladder wasn't working. So therefore he wasn't making any fluid. So he had next to no fluid left around him. And twin two, which was the one that was having the horrible trouble, was perfectly fine. Normal levels of everything. He was grand. So with twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome, both babies have to kind of be in, both babies have to be affected to get the official diagnosis. So, they can't do anything to help save the struggling twin until the other twin gets bad enough that then they can act. So we were then in a position where I was wishing for my twin two to deteriorate so that they could do something to save my twin one, who was clinging on. So that was a really, really dark place to be in. I just couldn't wrap my head around having to wish one of my babies got worse. Yeah, so that was difficult. So at that point we were being scanned twice a week. So every Tuesday and every Friday I would go in, and I used to say to the consultant, before I do anything, tell me, are there two heartbeats? So I'd be like holding my breath and going, are there two? And he goes, check one, okay, one heartbeat, check the other two heartbeats, breathe a sigh of relief because they were both still alive. Okay, has twin two gotten worse? Can you act yet? And then it'd be like, no, twin two hasn't gotten worse, so come back on Friday. And it'd be the same thing over and over again. So by the time I reached 17 weeks and 5 days, firstly, it's a miracle that twin one had clung on for so long.
Yes.
He clung on for 2 weeks with nothing around him, no bladder, no nothing. Clung on for 2 weeks while we waited for twin two to officially enter the diagnosis. The consultant knew that that twin had no time left, so he was acting that day regardless of whether twin two had entered it. Like, we knew we were out of time, so I had my bag in with me that day, ready to go, and he said, yeah, okay, twin two has gotten worse, so we can act now. So I had fetal laser surgery, so it's where they go in through the amniotic sac of the bigger twin. So that twin has too much fluid. They go in through that sac towards the placenta and they laser off any connecting blood vessels that the boys have through the placenta. Because the risk was that if twin one had died, because they shared a placenta with connecting blood vessels, the blood from the dead baby would travel through the placenta and into the other baby and either kill that baby or leave him severely brain damaged. So it was vital that surgery was done to separate them before anything happened to either twin. You know, otherwise I could have lost both of them. And to go down the rabbit hole of the statistics, I think... the chances of having twins, I think Tracy, somebody had said it was Sheila had said it was 0.25%. Yeah. So your chance of having twins are 0.25%. Then of those 0.25%, 15% of them get twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome. Then of those 15%, of the 0.25%, 33% of them make it through after the surgery with no alive babies. 33% of them make it through with one baby alive and one baby having not made it, and 33% make it through with both babies alive. And somehow I ended up in the category where both babies made it through alive.
Oh my God.
Yeah, like total miracles.
Oh my God. You just seem to have gotten such hard news to process and it go down and then it spiked back up with a miracle.
Yeah.
And then it seems that you've gotten hard news again. And then it spiked back up. Yeah. So how was that whole surgery then, Claire, to go through? What was your headspace like and who was there with you?
I was really calm because I was just so delighted that they could finally do it.
Okay.
Both babies are about to die. I was 100% about to lose both my babies and I just wanted them to do the surgery so bad because it was the only hope I had. So the surgeon's very funny. They're like, you're so calm. You know, I was so calm in there. And it's like, because now I have something to hope for, you know, you're hopefully going to save my babies. Like, I'm so happy to be in this situation where I'm having the surgery because, you know, a day or two more and I mightn't have had the opportunity to do the surgery. It could have been too late. So I was so calm that day. Delighted it was done. Felt great afterwards. My sister, I was in there alone. My sister came in with me for the scan that morning, but then she had to go home to her own twins. So I've been in the hospital on my own all day and went up for the surgery on my own and came back down. It was fine. You know, the staff are really nice. They look after you well. And I was given some nice drugs as well, which was, you know, I was really calm.
Yeah.
And yeah, they just scan you the next morning to just check our both hearts beating. They can't tell if the surgery had worked or not. So they scan you the morning after just to see, are they alive? Did they make it through the first hurdle of the surgery? And thankfully, mine were both alive. So then you're discharged that day to go home, you know, for bed rest and come back in a week. And you come back in a week to see, A, are they both alive? And B, has it made any difference to the TTTS? So thankfully already you could see twin one's bladder was already back functioning and there was more fluid around him immediately. Like, it was just amazing. And then the next week I came back for another scan and it had improved even further. So the diagnosis had gone then. They were just great, yeah.
Oh my God. So at this stage, are you off work? Are you on bed rest? And
no, I worked all the way through. I took a few days off because my doctor told me to take a few days off because I think there's a risk of the sac rupturing because obviously they've poked a hole in it to go through for the surgery. So you're on rest for a few days and then, just back to work then. And I found it much easier going back because, you know, otherwise you're sitting in your dark thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Okay, so how was then, after, was this the last kind of was this the last kind of serious bit of the pregnancy when it got very low, and then when it spiked back up in positive results, was that the last, did the rest of it kind of go smoothly for you then?
Yeah, no, it was still touch and go, as in, you know, you're in every week then, you know, checking to make sure that the babies are fine. So there's still like extra close monitoring. I think it took a good few weeks for me to relax and know that they had made it through and they'd recovered. Absolutely. And it was fine. So I still spent maybe another 4 or 5 weeks going in, going, are there two heartbeats? You know, the first question. Okay. And then breathing. It took a while for that to go.
Yeah.
I think normally, on average, those babies come 10 weeks after the surgery. So my doctor's focus was on get them to 28 weeks. If we get them to 28 weeks, at least we've hit the average. Please not any sooner than that. So we were still on a week by week basis of trying to keep them in as long as possible. So, you know, if it became unsafe, we were always judging in or out, which is safer. So I made it to the 28 weeks, which was a relief. And then the weeks just kept coming then. Then I did get to relax and enjoy it a little bit. You know, I've signed off work at 30 weeks. It was just more, they could come anytime now, but if we can get to 34, that's great. They couldn't stay in any longer than 34 weeks because of the surgery, so that was the max they could stay in.
Okay. Wow. So what happened then the day before 34 weeks? You had a planned C-section, so talk me through then the night before, and then talk me through your birth if you're happy.
Yeah. So that week I had been in every day for a scan because things had started to turn a little bit. So again, they were like, will we deliver today? No, we'll scan tomorrow. Okay, will we deliver today? No. So again, I made it to my planned day, which was great.
Well done.
I was first on the list for the surgery. So I went in, got my room, got ready, went down to theatre. It was all very quick and smooth. I was really calm, really relaxed. Just couldn't wait to see them. And then when I got into the theater to have them and I kind of saw the two stations set up for the babies, I then got really anxious. It was like the reality of, okay, because it was always said we don't know what impact what they've been through has had on them until they come out. So I'd had the steroid shots for the early delivery, like everything had been done to help them as much as possible. But there were certain elements of, we don't know, will there be impacts until they're here? So I didn't know, were they going to come out and need oxygen? Were they, you know, did the risk to twin two for the twin transfusion syndrome was that it could have put a lot of strain on his heart because he was beating kind of for the two of them and keeping them both alive when the other twin was struggling. So he might have an issue with his heart that we won't know till he comes out. And the twin that was struggling in the pregnancy, he was really, really small. So he was, you know, what difficulties will that be for a small baby? So there was a lot of unknowns until they were born. So in that moment when I was sitting kind of waiting, bent over, getting the spinal tap and just looking at the two stations for the boys, I was like, okay, I don't really know what's going to happen in the next hour, you know, if they're going to be okay or if they're not. So that was when I got nervous. But then, anyway, that was fine. We were there. We were in the moment. So lay down. They started the C-section. The first twin came out bum first. They held him up. He made this kind of cat wail noise. And then there was silence from him for a good while, actually. I didn't know what was going on. But there was one shriek of noise. And then that was it. And then within the next 2 minutes, the second baby was out. And he was screaming the room down, like wailing. So we knew he was fine. I mean, he was, yeah, great, really, really loud cries, but I still couldn't hear the first twin. And I'd say it was a good 5 minutes before I heard any more noise for him. So I was a bit worried for a while that there was something wrong. I heard he needed a bit of resus, and then he came around and he was fine. And then somehow, after everything they had been through, both boys were perfectly healthy, perfectly fine, needed no oxygen, didn't need anything. Yeah, they just needed to go to NICU for feeding and growing.
Wow.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Oh my God, what a story, Claire. Oh my God, you literally went through every single, I'd say, emotion throughout your conception and your pregnancy and birth and delivery. Wow. So what happened then when your boys were there, they went up to NICU, did you get brought into the recovery room?
Yeah, so I didn't get to hold them. They got to carry them over. I didn't get to hold them. I didn't get skin to skin or anything. But they carried them over to me, showed me them one at a time, and then were taken to NICU by each of the teams and sat up there, and I went to recovery. I you know, was really anxious to see, were they okay? So I was asking them, you know, can you call down to the NICU and see if the baby's okay? And they called down and I was told the babies were stable, which isn't a lot of information for a mom upstairs worrying about her babies. No. But apparently that means they're doing good. But that was all that came back. So that was a bit worrisome. And I kind of didn't really know what to make of that report. So I asked my sister to go down to NICU and just put eyes on them and see, what does stable mean? Are they okay? You know, so she went down and took a few pictures and brought them up to me. So that was really nice to see them. And at that point, then I knew they were okay. And yeah, they were just getting set up, happy out in their little incubators, and the doctors or whatever were doing what they needed to do to get them, you know, moved into their first home.
Okay. Yeah.
So then I was wheeled then back to the ward. And I was a public patient the whole time, actually, and I got consultant led care. The, you know, the twin specialist in the hospital scanned me himself every time, you know, took such great care of me. And Brilliant. You know, I was in the public system, and I know it was probably him, but I was wheeled back to a private room, which I really appreciated because I knew I wasn't going to have my babies beside me. And that was something that I had worried about, you know, being on a ward and hearing other people with their babies and not having mine. So I was really appreciative of having the privacy after that to kind of sit with my family and process the fact that I was lying there and I didn't have my babies, you know.
And they spent a while, Claire, then in NICU. I know one of your boys spent 18 days and one 24. So how was that? Was them for long days?
Yeah, it was good for them. I found the NICU journey really hard. Really, really, really hard. And, you know, the staff in there are incredible. But that's their workspace. That's the space they know, you know, whereas to a first-time parent, that place is just... I don't know how to describe it, but it's really overwhelming. You know, you're asking for permission to touch your baby, you know, which is such such a big thing, you know. And you're waiting for somebody to tell you can hold them, that you can, you know, this is how you feed them through a tube, or, you know, no, close the door, don't let the air in the machine. Like, it's just really, really surreal.
Unnatural.
And you don't know... I don't know. I don't know how you can possibly prepare anybody for that. But I think it would be, and because it's like an environment that you have to keep sterile, I'm not sure what they could do, but like an orientation of some sort, I think would be really useful, because you're hit when you walk in with just an environment that's so unnatural. You're so worried about your babies and you don't know whether you can touch them, whether, you know, it's very emotionally very, very, very hard. I found NICU really hard, and that was me with two healthy babies. So I can't imagine how people find it if they have very, very sick babies, you know. But the environment is very hard to cope with. And especially I had two babies there and I'm one parent. And there was a week where I had a baby at home and a baby in the NICU. And that was the hardest week of everything. I really struggled that week because, you know, I already had to get somebody to mind my newborn baby so I could go and spend time with the other. And then I had to go home at night and leave him, and the guilt of leaving one baby behind and going to the other. That was the hardest part of the NICU journey for sure.
Wow. So who did you have, say, minding one of your boys at home then when you went into NICU, or who was around you and supporting you mostly?
Yeah, so I moved into my parents' house for this period of time until, you know, I got on my feet with the boys for a few months, and then we moved back out on our own. So my mom would, and I had a C-section so I couldn't drive, so my mom would have the baby, my dad would drop me in. I tried to go into the NICU twice per day all the way through. So, you know, I would spend the morning, the very early morning, with Noah, my twin. Then I'd get my mom to mind him while I got my dad to drop me into the hospital, where I'd spend an hour or two with Finn. Then I'd get somebody to collect me, bring me home, spend an hour or two with Noah, get dropped back into the hospital, spend an hour or two with Finn, and then bawl my eyes crying going home at night, leaving Finn on his own, and then, you know, pumping through the night and feeding Noah, and then waking up the next morning and doing it all over again. So for a week, that was really, really, really hard.
Wow. Oh my God, that sounds, even to listen to, never mind you've been in it and recovering, and God, that sounds so much, Claire. Well done.
Yeah, and my family, like, you know, even just the driving me in and out of the hospital. Yeah. You know, that's a 40-minute trip each way, twice per day. You know, that was a lot for my family to do as well. And I had 24 days of needing lifts in and out. So, you know, if it wasn't for them, like, that was a huge undertaking and really impacted them as well. So, you know, I was so lucky that I had that support that could do that.
Wow. So when your second boy came home then, and you had both the boys at home, yeah, what was that feeling like, and what was the day like?
Yeah, it was great. You know, when I brought Noah home first, there was people waiting in the driveway for us as the car pulled up. Yeah, which was lovely. So then when it happened with Finn, it was really nice. And, you know, like, they're twins that have shared the womb, and for the first 24 days they were in separate beds. So, like, their NICU journey was so separate. They were apart. So it was the first time I put them together since they were born. Mm. So that moment of bringing Finn into the house and putting him in the little day bed beside his brother was, yeah, it was a really special moment. It was like the three of us were finally united, yeah, in our home and ready to start our lives together. Yeah, it was a great day, great day.
Wow. And what was the first night like then, or when did it even hit you that you were home and no one was going anywhere, you didn't have to get lifts?
Yeah, it was going to be a lovely night, but unfortunately Finn kind of presented with colic that night. And he started screaming the house down, and it was hard. Like, they were so tiny. I know every twin parent, I think all of our babies are normally small when they're born. Finn was 4 pounds and Noah was 5'3". So, like, Finn was so tiny, and, like, he was screaming in pain with colic. And actually the first 3 nights now, it broke my heart. But my mom had to take Noah into the bedroom with her because Finn was needing such attention from me. You know, he was in a lot of pain, so it wasn't a nice kind of first night with the three of us together. You know, there was a lot of guilt having to ask my mom to take a baby for the first few nights, but we got it together. And Finn, I think it was just a real shock to his system, because actually after 3 or 4 nights the screaming stopped that time, and I got to take both of the babies into my bedroom and kind of start the nightly routine. So yeah, it was horrible. I kind of felt a little bit like I was failing from the start in the first few nights. So it was nice to kind of have us united and do it myself, you know.
Wow. Well done. Oh my God. That's amazing. And how then has it been, Claire, since you had your boys home and they were in your room? How has it been since then?
Yeah, it was really challenging. I'm not going to lie. You know, preemie babies aren't easy. The boys had cow's milk protein allergy. They had reflux. I found out at 4.5 months that they had a 75% tongue tie. So all of these issues, the boys never drank their bottles for me. I could not get them to drink their bottles. They just refused to drink their milk. And I was in and out of the hospital going, my babies don't eat, my babies don't eat. What's wrong? What's wrong with them? I counted, you know, the volumes they used to take. I would sit down 14 times a day to feed each baby. So I would do 28 feeds in a 24-hour period. Like, I couldn't get anywhere. I couldn't go out even for a walk in the buggy. The boys, it was like they would only drink an ounce or two and then they wouldn't drink anymore. So then an hour later they were hungry again and screaming. So I was just trapped inside the house with the two babies that were constantly hungry but wouldn't eat. Because they were hungry all the time and never full, they were never content, and they also never slept. So they were just really difficult, unhappy, unsettled babies, and I really, really, really struggled for quite a long time with them. I remember one day the boys were in their little rocker chairs and they were sleeping, and I rung my sister, who's a twin mom, and I went, there's something wrong with the babies, like, they've been down, they've been sleeping for 2 hours, why are they so tired today? There must be something wrong. And it was in that moment where she kind of broke it to me that, like, Claire, this is actually what it's meant to be like, you know. And it was that realization of, oh, okay, you know, these babies just really aren't happy. They're not sleeping the way they're meant to. They're not eating. The experience I'm having isn't actually the normal experience of having babies. Like, these are hard babies, and I have two of them, and I'm a single parent. Like, no wonder I'm feeling overwhelmed. But I actually, in that moment, was really sad for myself and really sad for the boys that, you know, we were having such a difficult time. And it wasn't necessarily supposed to be that way. Probably don't think I'm explaining that right.
No, I totally get you.
Day where it was like, okay, this isn't normal. Thanks for pointing that out. But also, yeah. I'm really sad that, you know, we're not experiencing something normal. Yeah. So for 6 months, I had babies that were miserable and babies that were always hungry. Babies that I was trying to force feed all day long because I was so worried about trying to get them to eat and keeping their volumes up and that they'd be putting on weight. You know, we had a lot of input from Hollis Street, which I'm thankful for, because I was, you know, screaming out loud that I'm a single parent with two babies that won't eat, like, help me, help me, help me. And in the end, the answer was to take away all their bottles and just feed them solid foods. And we did that at 6 months, and the boys have been so happy, and I have finally got to enjoy being a parent to them. And yeah, it's been a life changer since I've stopped feeding them bottles.
Okay. Well, Claire, I'm sorry that your first 6 months were so difficult, and even your pregnancy sounds so, so hard. No matter how much of a positive person you are and how much you look at the bright side, everything you've been through must have been so, really so, so tough. So everything you felt is completely valid. And like your sister said, newborns should sleep. So it was abnormal for that. So you couldn't have done anything better. You couldn't have, you know, everything you were doing, you did with your instinct as a mom. And it's just your poor babies were obviously colicky and uncomfortable. But I'm so delighted to hear that it's picked up now for you in the last 6 months, since they were 6 months. So yeah, what's it like now then?
Yeah, it's great. It's really nice. And if I'm really honest, in the first 6 months, you know, people used to, you know, asked me, what can I do to help? And what I would say was, well, could you make me a time machine so I could go back and make different life choices for myself? Because this isn't the life that I would choose for myself if I could. Yes. I was that miserable. And it wasn't. Thankfully, I had no postnatal depression. That was the honest answer.
Yes.
This life was terrible. This life is hard. And this is not the life that I envisage or that I want. And if I could change it, not that I didn't love my babies and would want to get rid of them, but if I could go back to a life where I would make a different choice and this wouldn't be my life, I would do it in a heartbeat. So to now not be in that position and to laugh with my boys every day and to, you know, cuddle with them and to see them growing and developing and have their little personalities. And yeah, it's night and day from my first 6 months to the last 2 months. And we're only 2 months into the good time. And yeah, it's now worth it. Now all worth it. And now I wouldn't go back in that time machine.
No. So it's just since, Claire, you started feeding them solids, they're actually full and they're just content now. Is that the change?
And they don't have any bottles, which I know is really not normal for babies.
No.
But they don't have any formula. They don't have any bottles. It's all gone. They just eat solid foods. So they had a real strong oral aversion to bottles based on the fact that they had tongue tied, that they were tube fed babies, that they had cow's milk allergy initially, that they had reflux. They just associated feeding with pain, discomfort, you know. So since we got rid of the bottles and I'm not trying to force them on it and they just eat solid foods, they are so happy. They're just so, so happy. And then I'm so happy and our days are hard, but they're normal hard. They're not any extra hard, you know. It's hard being a twin mom, you know. It's busy. You don't stop from one end of the day to the other, but that's as hard as it is. It's just that it's a hard day rather than this is miserable, this is relentless, this is, you know, which is what it was for the first 6 months. Now there's three happy people living together and, you know, yeah, having a lovely life.
Oh, and have you moved out of your parents' house now, Claire?
Yeah, we moved out at, I think it was three or 4 months we moved out. So, yeah.
Okay. Well done. Wow. Well done. Honestly, I'm in such awe of you, doing it all yourself, making your decision and been through the tough road that you went through, and to come out now smiling in front of me is just lovely. Claire, what would be your advice to someone who's pregnant now or a twin mom listening?
Just keep putting one foot in front of another. No matter if it's a happy phase or a hard phase, it all passes. It mightn't feel like it's going to pass in the moment, but if you just keep putting one foot in front of another, eventually whatever situation you're in will be over. So yeah, that's just it. Just keep moving forward.
Okay. Okay. And someone, Claire, who was in your boat as well and longed to be a mom.
Yeah.
And hadn't met someone, would you recommend the IVF journey, or when, what would be your advice?
Oh, 100%, but only ever transfer one embryo.
Okay.
I don't think people know how hard this life is as a twin mom unless you've done it yourself. So, you know, just put in one embryo. Don't actively try to have twins. Sorry, Tracy, I know that's how you end. but yeah, do it. Definitely do it. Yeah. You know, even if it's a case of getting some stuff in the freezer and giving yourself the option in a few years' time. You don't have to do it right now, but do what you need to do that you have that choice in a few years.
Yeah, that's great advice. And what would be then your advice to a mom who is, her kids, her babies are in NICU? What would be your advice to get through NICU, the hard NICU times?
Oh, that's really hard, because I probably I wish I had asked more questions in the NICU initially. The early days are hard. I think once you get into the swing of how NICU life is, it gets easier. But in the first week, just keep asking. Ask questions, you know. Ask to be involved with your babies. Ask, can I pick them up? Don't wait to be told, you know. Really take the, I don't know, because it's such a powerless position to be in. Mm-hmm. So where you can give yourself a little bit of control, or feeling like, you know, you have a little bit of control, take it. Because it's such a hard, it really is. I can't describe how hard NICU life is. It's just, you know, and sorry, I know I'm probably going way over time, but like, all of the NICU parents are in the one space. So you have the parents of some really sick babies, along with the parents of, you know, babies like mine that are just there for feeding and growing. And, you know, unfortunately, a girl of another set of identical twins that was in the NICU the same time as me only came out of it with one of her babies. One of her babies didn't make it. And that's the environment we're all in. And I'm not quite sure where I'm going with this, but I think I used to have a lot of guilt when I was sitting at home feeling so despairing in my life of, you know, being at home with two difficult twins. And I always used to think of that poor girl that wanted to have two babies and only left with one. Yeah, so I'm not quite sure what the advice is and where I'm going with it.
But
I guess it's just going back to that still, you know, even if it's really hard and it's not as hard as somebody else's, it's still okay to feel like it's hard for yourself, and not to compare, because life as a NICU mom, even with two healthy babies, is hard. And even if it's not as hard as the other NICU mom who has two sick babies, don't not feel for yourself in that moment, because it isn't easy. So I know I've said that wrong, but I guess it's
You, and everyone's journey is completely different as well, and some person might feel way more emotional, and that's, we're all just human, so whatever your journey is, you know, and feel whatever you need to feel as well, I always say. What would be your three words then to describe a twin mom like Claire?
The first 6 months I have one word: relentless. That's all it was. There's no other words to describe that. Relentless. Now I would say it's more of a sentence: crazy but fun.
Oh, that's brilliant. Well done, Claire. Oh my god, you've had a roller coaster of a pregnancy and birth and delivery, so well done you, honestly. Thanks. I applaud you.
And am I crazy, but I kind of want another baby.
Well done. Well, that is absolutely the perfect way to finish that you want another baby after all you've been through. Claire, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thanks, Emil.